This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Charlotte Flows. Hi and welcome to Charlotte Flows. Here we are another week and another opportunity to step out of the doing of life and into the being of life. This half an hour show is where I share my learnings, musings and discoveries of living life by my design. I hope you enjoy the show. So here we are, very excited this week. We've started the guest run and we have another fabulous guest on the show. This week, somebody that I've been really excited to chat to, and it's taken us a wee while to get here, because we're always very full in our lives. But here we are. I am with the most beautiful human, Simone Grayson, who is a Carterton local that many in Carterton would know the name. They'll go, oh yes, and a recent recipient of a Carterton Rocking Award for community giving, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was voluntary
community service contribution. So yeah. Welcome, Simone.
Oh, thanks, Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
And it was the Carterton Rocking Awards and seeing you get that supreme win and your beautiful image that popped up everywhere around the region that inspired the conversation. I've known you for a while, not well, but I've known you. Our paths have crossed in the circles of the things that we get involved in. Yes. And the reason I wanted to chat was to have the conversation with another like-minded human about why is it people like us fill our cups and get lit up by giving to community? Because that is something we have in common. We are driven by giving.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I just wanted to have a chat about what do you think that, where does it come from? What drives it?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, because my husband and I were speaking the other night about this, and, you know, we were trying to understand if it was because I saw my parents do it, you know?
Yeah.
But they were both full-time workers, and I think in my dad's spare time it was more about trying to, you know, make sure there was always money in the tin. And so he would go and do volunteer stuff. Well, he'd go and help at people's homes, and he would chop down trees and, you know, mow their lawns, and he'd just do those practical things, typically for older people. Mm. So he was a policeman, and so he was always giving.
Yeah.
And my mum was more focused on us, you know, as children, and making sure our hobbies were all, and we were doing ballet and all those sorts of things. So it was, everyone was very, very busy a lot of the time. So I think that as a driving force for me is something I certainly recognised in my in growing up. And then, you know, through your 20s, you kind of lose it. It's more about you and having fun. And then becoming a parent, that's when I started to jump on, you know, school boards and things into roles because people needed someone.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it started back, you know, what, 16 years ago, trying to build a canteen and being, you know, there with a friend. We both thought we could do it, and, you know, cleaning out the kitchen at school and raising the money and, you know, running the events, actually cooking the food every week. And yeah, it just kind of grew.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's funny how you know, that one pinpointing, you know, project thing. So for you being in that school environment, seeing a need, thinking I can do that, finding your people, driving a project, it gets quite addictive.
it really does.
And is my thought as you say that, because I'm like, yeah, this resonates with me. I can know that pinpoint moment.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, and then those feels from doing something, from achieving something, from going from idea to fruition.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it was a similar moment when I joined Kapai Carterton, because I wasn't working at the time. I was looking after the kids. We had two still at home, two at school. And I'd been driving to Masterton from Carterton, and I picked up a hitchhiker. And it was a chap who, you know, lives in Carterton. And we knew him. He was, you know, a friendly guy. And he was going to the food bank. And I said, you know, we've got that open pantry in Carterton. And he said, yes, that's my main source of food. And I thought, that's horrific. And then I was thinking to myself, someone needs to do something. In Carterton, you know, there's domestic produce. People are always, you know, have the cardboard box outside the front saying, free apples, help yourselves. And I thought, someone needs to collect up all that domestic produce and then redistribute it and make more open pantries. And, you know, I thought Lions Rotary could get involved, Men's Shed could build them, you know, like, and I had this whole plan in my head.
Boom!
Yeah. So I went to a friend and I said, hey, I've got this idea, I need your help. And she said, have you seen that job with Kapai Carterton? Because you should apply for that job and then you can do this thing and loads of other things to help community. So she said, go home, write your CV, apply for that job.
Wow.
And that's how it started.
Yeah. That paid entity. Because, you know, and well, this will come into play, you've got the things that you do that are just your community give back.
Yeah.
And then we have both, like, this has been, I guess, your entry point of doing good, but actually it being paid, which,
yeah,
you know, is that full circle of love, isn't it? It's the dream, really. If you find the roles,
yeah,
you can do the good, plus you get paid to do that.
Absolutely.
It's the magic combination for me.
Yeah, me too. And Kapai Carterton was the dream vehicle.
Wow.
Yeah, because it allowed me to take my energy wherever I saw in community needed it most. Also, it meant I could learn how to write the grant applications. You know, I could learn to connect with the stakeholders, so the councils and the organisations, and really create, polish, I suppose, the skills.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was super valuable.
Because let's just go back a bit, because I mean, just thoughts are popping as we're having this conversation. What, when you were a kid, you've grown up watching your parents, so you've got that sense of this is morally, you know, something that's imprinted within me, giving back to community, giving back to people around you. What did you leave school wanting to do? And then what did you end up doing? I'm intrigued, because it can be two different things.
Yeah, so music was my passion at school, whether it be playing instruments, so, you know, drums. I was in the jazz combo, I was in the rock band, played guitar, you know, we would win the music, you know, end of, what was it, house music every year. Yeah, so I loved music, that was my passion. And listening to music and understanding lyrics and everything. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a DJ. Yeah.
Wow.
And and then when I was 18, there was a course in Australia, because I had no direction prior to that other than having fun listening to music and hanging out with friends. And I was in Australia with my sister, and there was an ad in the paper of a music business management program.
Wow.
So I went home, showed my mum and said, this is what I want to do. And she was delighted that there was something.
Yeah.
She said, apply. And it was in Australia. So I applied, I got in. And so here I was learning how to manage bands, essentially.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I moved to Australia and then started studying, essentially, to become a band manager.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was just learning the ins and outs of the industry. And, you know, creating the budgets and doing organising the tours, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But then I realised that it was actually still hard work and I wasn't in that frame be working. So after that I moved to Australia. No, where was I? I was living in Australia. I moved to England eventually and, you know, holidayed for 2 years, living in a squat in Hackney. Yeah, 2 years it was, and then needed a job. So I was staying with a friend in Belsize Park, and I decided to apply for a nanny job.
Yeah.
Because I had no comprehension of what it actually took, but I thought, oh, how hard can it be? So off I went. I applied at this nanny agency up in Hampstead Heath, and there were three jobs on offer. The one that I wanted was mum's a choreographer, 7-year-old daughter, three cats, possible travel to New York.
Holy yes, yeah. Please.
And so I'm actually classically trained as a dancer, so...
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's...
yeah.
The bombshells of fabulousness just continue to come.
So I only wanted a job for a month because I thought all I want to do is get enough money in the bank so I can keep holidaying. But this role was a minimum of 6 months.
Right.
So I thought, oh, I can do 6 months. So I met this woman that night, and I was standing in a particular way, and she said to me, "You're a dancer." I said, I was. She said, "What kind of dance?" I said, "I did RAD," and she said, "That's what I, you know, studied." And she was writing down details, and she handed me a piece of paper and said, "Go and talk to this woman. You need to get back into classes." And so that was the trigger, and I met, her name was Arlene Phillips. She was a world-famous director choreographer who I had not heard of, but through her I started, I eventually, you know, first a nanny, then the PA, then ran the business, and then we'd travel and we would set up shows. So,
oh my life.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever, Starlight Express, We Will Rock You, you know, those were her shows. And so we'd travel the world. And
how long did you do that for?
I was there for about 11 years. I was with her for 8 years. So,
hey.
Yeah.
Oh God, I love hey. I love the Kiwi stories of, I've come across so many of these.
Absolutely.
Like the braveness of, you know, just giving it, why not give it a go?
Yeah.
And the connections and the randomness. I mean, I just hear, and I love it. I hear so many of these.
Yeah.
And I just am always like, until you have a one-on-one conversation with somebody and you just start asking these questions, you would not have a clue.
You don't know. Yeah.
But I think it's gold.
That job, because of the way it was so flexible, because I was her right arm, and because we were travelling and I'd meet lots of different performers in different shows, and they would all say, "I'm going to come to London. When I come to London, you know, will you get me a job?" So then they would come to London eventually, all these people from around the world. So I was meeting all these performers and, you know, trying to get them auditions.
Connecting,
you know,
them with people,
yeah,
knowing who to connect them to, being
absolutely
that super connector.
Yeah. And so it was the relationships.
So it was about.
Absolutely. So eventually when I moved back to Sydney, you know, after 11 years in London, I said out loud, I want to do this professionally. I want to be an agent, a talent agent.
Okay.
And I said it to the right person, and he said, "Well, we need to meet. I'd like you to head up my the arm of my Australian company, which is an English outfit called INC Artist Management. I want you to start the Australian arm." So suddenly, all of that training, you know, with the touring and the managing and the people.
Yeah,
and
it all connected.
It was all coming together. Yeah.
Oh my God, don't you love that?
Yeah, it's great.
But you have to be a magnet for it.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, you need to be open to it.
You need to be open.
Definitely.
You need to be flexible.
Yeah, and recognise the transferable skills.
Yeah, because they've all, yeah, it's, I often talk about here when we're talking and when I'm learning something, that all of these tendrils go out and then at some point they all come together and they knot together and the learning is there. And you go, oh, okay, I've been learning this, this and this. And it sounds like that's exactly what that life was.
Oh, absolutely.
You went here and did that, you went here and did that. You said yes to opportunities, you're open. But then you come back and boom.
Yeah. And so whenever I speak to kids, or probably more young people, you know, I'll present to just groups, so business schools or, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll always say to them, you might think you're on your path, but actually it's all the stuff that you're learning in between that you are collecting that is shaping you into who you are and what you're going to be.
So true.
Yeah.
So there's all of this.
Yeah.
And you're in Australia and you're in the UK. When do you come back here?
Back to New Zealand end of 2015.
Oh, so not...
Yeah, not that long,
long ago.
Yeah.
So you started your family...
In Australia.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we had three babies in Australia, and then my dad got very sick, and I was pregnant with baby number four, so I was commuting between Australia and New Zealand. My sister and I were both tag-teaming.
Oh, gosh.
To, you know, my dad had cancer, but his cancer journey was quite short, and
right,
we were not aware of a lot of it. So by the time we got wind of what was happening, it was
so
June
far,
and we were so far down the track.
Right.
So I think in about October, I could no longer travel. I'd had deep vein thrombosis and, you know, all the flights, right. And it was just ugly. And I'd said to my husband, we need to go to New Zealand. We need to move, because I didn't want to miss the window if something happened to him and I could no longer fly being pregnant.
Right, yeah,
so
yeah.
I said to my husband, we have to go. And he said, okay, when are we going? And I said, 3 weeks. So I packed up my family. We moved back to New Zealand, and I'd bought a house in Carterton years ago that my grandmother lived in.
Okay.
Yeah, so she was in, you know, late 80s now. She was moving back to Australia to live with my aunt and uncle, so the house was here.
Oh, wow.
So we moved in with no plan whatsoever. And then, unfortunately, my dad was gone within 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh.
So we thought we were going back to Australia. But it was in the run-up to Christmas, the family was there, and in a very short space of time, we recognised that the life here was far better than being on that, yeah, on that wheel in Australia. So we decided to stay.
Wow. Well, that's a perfect little moment for a musical break.
Yeah.
So let's just enjoy this.
Problems that upset you. Don't you know everything's alright? Yes, everything's fine. And we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by. So forget all about us tonight.
Everything's alright. Yes, everything's alright. Yes,
even I shall soothe. Forehead, then you'll feel everything's alright. Yes, everything's fine, and it's cool and the ointment's sweet for the fire in your head and feet. Close your eyes, and relax. Think of nothing tonight.
Everything's alright. Yes, everything's fine.
Hey, woman, you're fine.
Everything's fine, and we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight.
Everything's alright, yes, everything's fine.
Surely you're not saying we have the resources to save the poor from their lot. People always pathetically struggling. Look at the good things you've got. Think why you still have me. Move why you still see me. You'll be lost and you'll be so sorry. Well,
close your eyes.
you for choosing that. But we will not loiter there because there's so much to talk about. But so you're here, and there's so much I could ask you about that, but I kind of want to sort of whirlwind through, and I feel we might have another conversation another day. So all of that, so you're then in New Zealand, so you've got all of this stuff, you've got all of these skills, you recognise New Zealand is going to be home for a while.
Yes.
And you bring up your family, I'm guessing, and then, you know, is that when, you know, once the kids are at school, you see that project, then the Kaupai Kartan, or is there some...
What happened? Well, my husband, he was actually working in the Hawke's Bay.
Ah, okay.
So he would do a weekly commute, and I was with the kids, and because one was at Kindy...
God, that was full on.
It was full on, yeah, and one was very tiny... And because I was just following any ideas. And I had time on my hands, and that's when, you know, the whole Kapai Kartan
thing developed.
Yeah, started. So it was about me trying to juggle the four kids and, you know, do 30 hours a week with Kapai.
Wow, was that 30 hours? That's,
yeah.
Gosh, that was quite a leap into
yes,
juggle mode.
It was.
Or plate spinning, shall we say.
One super cool thing about that is I met Lucy McKenzie.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucy, her husband was also working away, and she also had her two kids, so she was doing the exact same juggle. So
okay.
Between the two of us, you know, we were able to pick up the kids, do whatever we needed, and make
sure.
Oh,
what a combo.
Yeah.
Nice. So, isn't that lovely, and the magic that and the companionship in the journey?
Yes.
Finding, because that's how I met you, I think, with Kaupai, with Lucy, and thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you were both an inspiration at the time, and the stuff that you did in Kaupai was still, I think, wow, that was really neat for that community, because I was, you know, in Martinborough looking on around and, you know, seeing the people that were doing things.
Yeah.
But if you go back to that sort of the giving and the, you know, where do you, I mean, are you a bit like, are your ideas always popping? You're always seeing opportunities?
Yeah, always. My ideas tend to be big. And
you are a big picture thinker, aren't you?
Yeah. And so if someone has a seed of an idea, they'll sometimes come to me and say, "Oh, I've thought about this," and I'll say, "Oh, great, you could do this, and this person can help," and, you know, so this thing morphs into something exciting. Yeah. And you know, it's fun because it's giving people confidence in their ideas, and when they know that you're inspired, you know, they are so invigorated, and just watching things come to life. That's been a lot of the fun of what I do, is because of all the open doors in Kartan, finding the people who will get behind it and, you know, jump on and share it. And
what do you class yourself as? Like, I often talk about myself as a connector. What are the things that you say about what do you now own? And has it been a challenge to be in that space, or have you totally owned it because of what you've done before?
I think I own it because with Kapai, certainly we were always on the clock. So we knew we had to move fast. Any idea that was crazy, Lucy was... She'd always try and test my ideas just to make sure they would work. But she was largely on board. Whatever we needed to do, we would just go. So I call myself an activator.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been described as someone who lights fires.
In all the good ways.
Yeah. And I've also been described as glue.
Oh.
So, connector, absolutely.
Connector, I guess. Yeah.
That's
your pet glue.
Yeah.
Something more exciting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And do you think this is, I mean, is this kind of life your life now, or do you think some of that other stuff will come back into the mix, or will it all just be blended into one beautiful, who knows?
Well, it's quite hard to say, because I do have multiple projects.
Of course you do.
The local ones, but there's also the bigger picture ones.
Yours.
Yeah. So the personal projects, one is a whānau-based project, and, you know, currently thinking of it, I think I talked about it after the Charles Rook Encounter. Someone said to me, what's the one idea that you're most excited with at the moment? And I said, it's a family project, because my cousin, who he's in his 30s, but he didn't know that he was part of our family until he was early 20s.
Okay.
So, you know, and then COVID happened, and he doesn't actually know a large number of the people in his family.
Right.
So he said he would like to do, you know, a hikoi. He wants to, with all of us, he wants us to travel around and visit the key places, yeah, from our family. So that would be down in Riverton, you know, near Invercargill. It would be up in Wairoa or, Wairoa, I'll just stick to that one. Kawhia on the other coast. So
why?
All these key places. So he can essentially learn, you know,
where he's from.
Yeah.
His place.
And it'd be a great connector for us as a family. So we're looking at turning that into something and having, you know, videographers shadow us so then we can tell the stories of our ancestors.
Wow.
So, yeah, it could be something really exciting. So there's things like that are
ticking away.
Yeah. Definitely.
Why? I'm sure, yeah, there's always something. And like you say, if people know you're the person to come to spark off,
yeah,
it will never stop.
No.
But, I mean, we could keep on going, but but we will have to wrap this up. Thank you so much for this conversation. I have been captivated by just learning more about you and your background and all the magic. And it just makes me realise the why.
Yeah.
Behind the magical plate-spinning world of Simone Grayson. Thank you for your time. Thanks, as always, to RFM for hosting the show. We hope you've enjoyed. We hope you've got inspired. Go out and do good things, and speak to you soon.